This is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg. KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. You know, let's focus on the data, not the spin. In 2009, after overly strict mark-to-market accounting rules were altered, we said that the financial crisis was over. It was hard to get our voice heard, though, because both sides of the political aisle were busy saying that the economy stunk. Political liberals tried to use the crisis to grow government and increase bank regulation. Political conservatives said it was a sugar high and that President Obama was going to cause a depression. It was all spin, all the time. Well, that's what it seemed like last Friday, when the September jobs report was spun into terrible news. Yes, non-farm payrolls rose an underwhelming 194,000 in September, well below the consensus expected 500,000. Meanwhile, the labor force, which is the number of people working or looking for work, declined 183,000. Some liberals seized on these figures to say that, one, the expiration of bonus employment benefits didn't boost jobs like free market supporters claimed, or two, that women are hesitant to get back into jobs because of COVID and the kids at home, and three, because the economy needs more stimulus. But the jobs report only captured the first couple of weeks of expired benefits. As a result, it's too early to tell the real impact of the expiration. Many recipients may have piled up enough savings to be patient in reentering the labor force. Meanwhile, vaccines, perhaps boosters, and waning COVID case counts should help more sectors return to normal. And if the amount of stimulus applied to the economy already hasn't worked, what makes anyone confident that even more stimulus would work? Wouldn't it call for a different strategy entirely? The bottom line is that the employment report really wasn't that bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't awful either. Payrolls were revised up by a combined 169,000 for the prior months. Much of the weakness in September itself was due to public school jobs that are still not back to normal due to COVID. The civilian employment measure of job creation was up a healthy 526,000. And more importantly, the number of hours worked rose 0.8% in September, the equivalent of more than 1 million jobs. In addition, wages per hour rose another 0.6%. So at this point, we expect a much stronger employment report for October. Supply chain problems, vaccine mandates at private companies, kids not being back in school, all of this mean a more volatile economic environment. But easy money from the Fed, less fear of COVID are continuing to boost economic activity. Yes, some disappointing numbers, but the economy has not ground to a halt. Right now, third quarter real GDP looks like it's coming in soft at around 2% annual rate, maybe below, and the report arrives just 6 days before the next Fed announcement. But we also expect both faster growth, job growth, and real GDP growth in the fourth quarter. As a result, Jerome Powell is likely to follow through on his intention to start tapering in November. This may cost him his job, but even if the Fed doesn't taper, it'll still be easy. As it happened in the past, economic reports have become a political football, with each side trying to use the data to score points for their side, greasing the wheel of politics to try to get policy or elections moving in their preferred direction. What's important for investors is to focus on the data, the underlying economic forces, and not the narrative driven by politics. Let's take a look at our global roundup this week. Global equities advanced on the week as markets reacted well to more details disclosed about the U.S. Federal Reserve's plan to taper its asset purchase program. The yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury note declined 1.57% from 1.61% a week ago, while the price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude oil rose to $82.15 from $79.80 last Friday. Volatility as measured by the CBOE Volatility Index, or VIX, declined to 16.5 on Friday from 18.7 a week ago. And our macro news. The U.S. inflation remained elevated in September. Consumer prices, which we'll talk about again here, rose 5.4% year-over-year in September, up from August's 5.3%. As global supply chains remained disrupted, food, shelter, energy's rise all contributed to the uptick. While inflation pressures are likely to ease once logistic logjams resulting from the pandemic are unraveled, the process is taking longer than expected, with no timely resolution in view. Central banks remain in a quandary over how to deal with the price rise, as negative supply shocks are not easily addressed by monetary policy. Policymakers are watching inflation expectations closely for signs that inflationary psychology is taking hold. The recent spike in the cost of living resulted in the U.S. Social Security Administration announcing that monthly payments to their retirees and beneficiaries will rise 5.9% in 2022, the largest such adjustment in 40 years. And the Fed lays out its taper timeline. In the minutes from the September meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee, the Fed outlined its plan to taper its purchases of treasuries by $10 billion a month and mortgage-backed securities by $5 billion, winding down the asset purchase program by next summer. The committee could adjust the pace of the moderation of its purchases if economic developments differ substantially from what they expect, the minutes said. And we're seeing soaring gas prices are prompted output cuts in Europe. Energy-intensive industries such as makers of ammonia and fertilizers have begun to curb production in Europe as a result of rising price of natural gas and other forms of energy. German electricity rates reached record highs this week, raising concerns that additional industries may soon scale back production. Furthermore, there are growing fears that the consumer demand will be undermined as a result of strains on household budgets from the energy cost spike. And Biden reaches out to U.S. oil and gas producers. After earlier appealing to OPEC to increase production quotas, the Biden administration this week implored domestic energy producers to help curb rising prices. This is a significant shift for the administration, which has pledged to move the country away from fossil fuels and has halted oil and gas development, leases on public lands, and canceled the Keystone XL pipeline. Energy producers say that they are going to be reluctant to ramp up production, which requires significant capital investment amid an increasingly hostile regulatory environment. We'll see where this one goes. And the International Monetary Fund trims global outlook. The International Monetary Fund updated its world economic outlook this week, trimming its 2021 global growth forecast by 0.1% to 5.9%. The U.S. forecast was cut to 6 from 6.1, while Eurozone outlook was raised to 5 from 4.6. China is expected to grow 8% this year, the fund estimates. Amid continuing supply chain bottlenecks, the IMF warned that central banks may need to be ready to take swift action against inflation if the recovery strengthens more than expected. Low levels of vaccination against COVID-19 among citizens of low-income countries is a major concern, the IMF said. And the U.S. and China trade talks break little new ground. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai and Chinese Vice Premier Liu He met virtually last week, the second high-level trade meeting since President Biden took office. Tai emphasized U.S. concerns relating to China's state-led non-market policies and practices that the government contends harm the American economy. That meeting helped set the stage for a virtual summit between Biden and China's President Xi Jinping in the coming weeks. And a few quick hits here. U.S. retail sales rose 0.7% in September from August, contrary to expectations of a slight drop. Bloomberg News reported this week that the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission won't oppose the introduction of Bitcoin futures exchange-traded funds. A few funds linked to the price of cryptocurrency could begin trading as soon as next week. Futures contracts linked to Bitcoin have traded on the CME since late 2018. Dick Donahue with you, and we will be back in a moment.
Imagine living in Linden, perched above the Nooksack River Valley with Mount Baker and the Cascade Mountains in the distance. Enjoy the peaceful surroundings of the mountains and nearby golf course. Make new friends and get involved in new activities. Enjoy fabulous home-cooked meals and spacious apartments designed with your needs in mind. Enjoy your independence. Visit Linden Manor today on Aaron Drive in Linden next to Bender Ballfields or at lindenmanor.com. Call Janet to arrange your personal tour and see why the residents love Linden Manor.
Cascade Radio Group proudly presents Dedicated to Duty, a campaign focused on the positive work and priorities of local law enforcement. As first responders, their duties demand dedication, and their stories deserve to be told. Dedicated to Duty. Find their stories on air and on this station's website. Brought to you by LTI, Inc., LTI, a Northwest leader in bulk transportation, and by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. There's something for everyone at Angel of the Winds Casino Resort, exit 210 off I-5 in Arlington.
Make your home improvement dreams a reality with West Edge Credit Union's Eco Fix It Loan by West Edge Credit Union. A new deck, install solar energy, or convert from gas to electric. The Eco Fix It Loan with no fees and a special low fixed rate make them possible. Secure financing now and use it when you're ready. Pay no interest until you draw funds. And with no equity requirement, means you can get funding in as little as 24 hours. Find solutions, not excuses, at West Edge Credit Union on James and Alabama in Bellingham. Some conditions apply. See West Edge for details. West Edge Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA. Online at westedgecu.org.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with this Sunday morning here on KGMI. We're Asset Advisors. We are located out in Ferndale on the Pacific Highway next to Wilson's Furniture. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. Check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. Give us a call if you'd like to talk to us, 360-733-1200. And we're going to continue talking about some of our global economic quick hits for the week. So we had a bill raising the U.S. debt ceiling by $480 billion, which is expected to be exhausted by the 3rd of December. And that was signed into law by President Biden this week. And Turkey President Erdogan fired three central bank officials on Thursday, clearing the way for more rate cuts despite surging inflation. A loss of investor confidence in the central bank set the lira to all-time lows. And for the first time since the pandemic began, U.S. weekly jobless claims data released this week fell below 300,000. And producer prices in China rose 10.7% in September, the fastest pace in more than 25 years. Over the past two decades, the directional movement of the Chinese and U.S. CPI has correlated closely. And at the urging of the White House, Southern California ports will operate 24/7 to try and alleviate logistical bottlenecks. However, it may be 3 months before that starts to happen. And amid COVID restrictions, Japanese GDP slumped 0.9% in August from the prior month, though the country's state of emergency has now been lifted. And the Bank of Korea signaled it is likely to raise rates in November from their present 0.75%. The Wall Street Journal reported this week that China's President Xi will expand his push to curb capitalist forces in China's economy by focusing on the ties between the country's dominant state-owned banks and on big private sector entities. And Goldman Sachs this week cut its economic growth forecast to 5.6% in 2021 from 5.7% and to 4% next year from 4.4%. The U.S. government reported that a record 4.3 million Americans quit their jobs in August at a time when there are 10.4 million jobs open in this country, suggesting that workers feel that they have significant leverage when it comes to bettering their employment prospects. And looking at the earnings news reports, which started this week, with about 8% of the constituents of the S&P 500 index having reported for the third quarter of 2021, blended earnings per share, which combines reported data and with estimates of those that have yet to report, shows that earnings growth is running at 29.8%, while sales rose about 15% compared to the same quarter a year ago, according to data from FactSet Research. Continued supply chain snags and rising input costs have investors focusing on the potential for margin erosion in the coming quarters. Back to that consumer price index report that I mentioned earlier, inflation is looking less transitory with each passing month. Consumer prices increased 0.4% in September, faster than the consensus expected of 0.3%, and are now up 5.4% versus a year ago, which is the largest yearly increase since 2008. It's important to recognize that this isn't merely a rebound from the steep price declines in early 2020 when COVID first hit the U.S. Consumer prices are up at a 3.7% annual rate since February of last year, which was pre-COVID. The volatile energy and food categories led prices higher in September, rising 1.3% and 0.9% respectively for the month. Meanwhile, core prices, which exclude energy and food, were up 0.2%. That may seem relatively tame, but the details of core prices suggest reasons to be concerned. Airfares fell 6.4% in September, remained very low compared to pre-COVID levels. If airfares had remained unchanged for the month, core prices would have been up 0.3% for the month, not 0.2%. Airfares are 23% below pre-COVID levels, so expect to see some large price gains in that category in the next couple of years. Meanwhile, rents rose rapidly in September in what is likely to be a harbinger of future rapid gains in the year ahead, now that there is no longer a national moratorium on evictions. Rents for actual tenants rose 0.5% in September, fastest gain for any month in the past 20 years. Owners' equivalent rent, what homeowners would pay if they rented their homes, increased by 0.4%, the most in 15 years. And keep in mind that these two categories of rent make up more than 30% of the overall consumer price index and about 40% of the core CPI. Given the huge run-up in home prices under COVID, as well as the typical lags between home price increases and rent growth, expect these categories to remain in tailwind for higher inflation in coming years. Notably, new vehicle prices continued to surge in September, up 1.3% for the month and up 8.7% in the last year. The hope that supply chain issues would fade after a few months has proven drastically wrong, as recent Delta-driven shutdowns in Asian country factories and ports, as well as large buildups in American ports, have not made matters worse. Ultimately, however, inflation depends on money. The Federal Reserve has been too loose, and now consumers are going to pay for it. And the September Producer Price Index report, while the report on consumer prices showed inflation rising at the fastest annual rate since 2008, price pressures further in the pipeline are even more severe, with the 12-month rise in producer prices hitting the highest level since 1981. Producer prices rose 0.5% in September and are up 8.6% in the last year and an even faster 9.8% annualized rate in the last 6 months. For years after the financial crisis, the question from many was whether the Fed could induce even 2% inflation. Now there's increasing skepticism that the Fed's transitory inflation will get back down anywhere near 2% in the foreseeable future. Supply chain issues continue to exert significant upward pressure on prices with no end in sight. and from the shortage in semiconductors that has been slowed production of everything from cars and trucks to household appliances to difficulties finding labor to fill the record number of job openings in the U.S., supply simply hasn't kept up with demand. And while the port congestion gets the news coverage, each step in the distribution process, from drivers to move loads out of the ports, trains available to move them across the country, and staff available to unload at warehouses, faces difficulties trying to meet demand. Yet last week's job report showed employers are working longer hours to make up for the lack of staff. But with consumption of goods up more than 20% from pre-COVID levels, while non-farm payrolls remain nearly 5 million workers short of pre-COVID staffing, it's a steep hill upward. The shutdowns of 2020 dumped sand in the gears of intricate free market system that intertwines with business in a nearly miraculous chain of connections that bring components from around the world together to produce products as simple as a pencil and as complex as pocket computers. And while producers were crippled, demand has amplified by an M2 money supply that is 34% above pre-COVID levels, leaving both consumer and corporate pockets flush with cash. And while supply chain issues will ultimately prove temporary, the huge increase in the money supply is what has driven inflation over the long term. In terms of the details for September, prices for goods led the overall index higher, rising 1.3%. The most notable increase came from rising costs for food and energy. Stripping out the typically volatile food and energy component shows that core prices rose 0.2% in September, and they are up 6.8% in the last year. In spite of inflation running well below the 2% target, no matter how you cut it, we don't expect the Fed to signal any change in plans to keep short-term rates near zero for the foreseeable future. They will likely begin to pare back asset purchases following the meeting in early November, but we do not anticipate a taper tantrum as we saw back in 2013. What matters most for the economy and the markets is when the Fed lifts federal funds rate, which is still a long ways off. The labor market has to heal considerably further to get the Fed so seriously consider liftoff. Speaking of the labor market, data shows initial jobless claims fell 36,000 last week to 293,000, the first sub 300,000 reading since March of 2020. Meanwhile, continuing claims declined 134,000 to a new recovery low of 2.593 million. All eyes will be on the jobs throughout the final quarter of 2021, and we expect job growth to accelerate. This is Dick Donahue with you here on KGMI with Wealth Wake Up. We will be back after a short break. Thank you for being with us.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com. Bringing the world to Whatcom County and Northwest Washington.
The People's Republic of China. They're launching the first pieces of their own space station.
The John Batchelor Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 10.
They're going to use what they learn in constructing this station and having people live on it to plan their manned interplanetary ship and to do it as quickly as possible.
On KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM and KGMI.com.
Discover the joys of retirement living at Meadow Greens Retirement Community. Located in beautiful Linden on a five-star golf course with panoramic views of rolling green hills and snow-capped mountains rising in the distance. Enjoy an independent lifestyle with your own private suite and so many amenities. including a fitness and wellness center, complimentary golf membership, and tailored social activities, or kick back and cozy up next to the fireplace in the library lounge. Plus, fine dining, 3 meals a day at the Outward Nine restaurant and the Duck Hook Bistro. Meadow Greens is a place where your independence is valued while your needs are taken care of. And rest assured that your comfort and safety are their highest priority. It's retirement living at its finest with a vibrant community and welcoming staff. Call Meadow Greens today for more information and to arrange a private tour. Call 360-354-8200 or online at meadowgreenslinden.com. The grass is always greener at Meadow Greens Retirement.
Hi, this is Scott from Northwest Sleep Solutions in Fairhaven. I often wonder what it's like to be a mattress shopper in today's market. You've got the 9-hour sale, the 1-day sale, the 2-day sale, the holiday sale, the pre-holiday sale, the held over holiday sale, the lowest prices of the year sale, my personal favorite, the I know we have a lot of sales, but this one's really a sale, the lowest prices of the season sale, the once in a lifetime sale, the pre-anniversary sale, the anniversary sale, the post-anniversary sale, the month-end clearance sale, the year-end clearance sale. Or you could just come by Northwest Sleep Solutions in Fairhaven, where you can avoid the insanity, try out some really nice beds, get better help, and simply pay less for your next mattress. No hype, just real value. That's Northwest Sleep Solutions on the corner of 10th and McKenzie in Fairhaven.
Northwest Sleep Solutions, the solution for a good night's sleep.
No matter what kind of work you do, whether it sounds like this, or even like this, if you have a work injury affecting your performance, Capstone Physical Therapy can help. Capstone Physical Therapy's Return to Work program will get you back to work and back to the activities you enjoy most. The Capstone team of expert physical and occupational therapists will take the time to learn about your injury and your job. They'll create a treatment plan specifically for you that includes evidence-based therapy proven to work. Capstone's LNI-approved Return to Work program is the first of its kind in Whatcom County. With Capstone, you'll perform work-specific rehabilitation activities that focus on getting you back to work and enjoying life. Even if you've tried physical therapy before, not all physical therapy is the same. Discover what sets Capstone apart. Get back to work and back to life with Capstone Physical Therapy. Learn more at capstonept.com.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
A properly operating furnace will guarantee that you stay comfortable as the seasons change. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electric for a system inspection today at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Gonna to also cover September retail sales report this week that came out. And retail sales continued to show strength in September, surprising the consensus and rising 0.7% for the month. The sales gain was broad, with 11 of 13 major categories up in September, led by general merchandise stores, back to school shopping, and gas stations, more miles driven and consumers paying more in the pump. Overall sales are up a robust 13.9% from a year ago. Another way to look at it is that sales are up 18.9% versus February of 2020, which was pre-COVID. And core sales, which exclude the most volatile categories of autos, building materials, and gas station sales, rose 0.7% in September, are up 14.2% from a year ago, and up 19.4% versus February of 2020. In other words, due to temporary government support, retail sales are running much hotter than they would have in the absence of COVID, even as the level of output, which is real GDP, is still running lower than it would have been in the absence of COVID. This has not been an even recovery for all major categories, though. For instance, non-store retailers were up 36.1%. Sporting goods stores are up 37.1%. have grown significantly faster than overall retail sales since February of 2020. The last category of sales to get above February 2020 levels was restaurants and bars, which finally moved into the green in April and now up 9.3% from 19 months ago. Looking ahead, given the overall retail sales are still far above the pre-COVID level, we expect a modest trend decline in the year ahead. However, as long as policymakers don't panic again about COVID, we also expect that sales at restaurants and bars to buck that trend and move higher alongside with sales for services not counted in the retail trade report as America gets back to normal in the months ahead. The path of retail sales will be a battle between the number of opposing factors. Rising wages, jobs, and inflation will all be tailwinds for retail sales, while the waning of the temporary and artificial boost from stimulus checks, along with the end to overly excessive jobless benefits, will be headwinds. In other factory-related news, the Empire State Index, a measure of New York factory sentiment, declined to a still elevated 19.8 in October from 34.3 in September. Finally, we also got in trade inflation data. Import prices rose 0.4% in September, while export prices increased 0.1%. In the last year, import prices were up 9.2%, while export prices were up 16.3%. These figures add to the evidence that the Federal Reserve is too loose. And Carson Group, we had our annual Excel conference this week in Las Vegas. I did attend it virtually rather than in person. But one of the interesting things I saw was discussion there about the fact that insurance products are morphing more into securities. And what we're seeing is that they're basically putting commissions aside. The insurance industry is quickly and somewhat quietly blending into a larger realm in the securities market, at least from a regulatory perspective. And that was one of the takeaways from the conference. So basically what happened in the regulatory marketplace is that Wall Street and Main Street are continuing to come together. Regulation is pulling annuities into the fiduciary landscape. What that means is we're seeing fee-based advisory services continue to dominate the wealth management and industry today, and commission-heavy insurance industry is taking notice and trying to react accordingly. Now, we are totally fee-based, and we do some fee-based annuity work, which means you don't have those big front-end commissions, you don't have those big back-end surrender charges. It is something that we're more than happy to talk to you about. So in terms of fee-based options for insurance products, progress has really been pretty sluggish. Carriers are moving there, but the adoption rate has been slower than what would have been anticipated. Need for insurance industry to migrate to fee-based products is more complex than just placing commission-based products on the fee platforms. Over time, though, fee-based and fee-only will become much more dominant, and we're seeing that in our business here. So we're seeing a lot of movement towards the fee side. We do a lot of what we call 1035 exchanges on a lot of the annuity products that have been running around out there for years. And even the variable annuity side, you're going to find your total internal costs are in many cases in excess of 4%. And we're able to reduce a lot of those fees, one of the biggest fees, down to about 0.45%. So it's a substantial savings when it comes down to the fees that people are paying. You know, I'm going to keep talking about this every week if necessary, because I think it's something that people need to realize. But the taxes that are being proposed in the bills that are before us, the infrastructure bill and the social infrastructure bill, are going to hit Americans basically from the top to bottom. And while President Biden claims that the massive new government entitlements in his Build Back America plan will be paid by corporations and those at the very top, however, the taxes in the plan are going to hit low and middle Americans with diminished savings, lost jobs, lower wages, higher prices, and more taxes. The House of Representatives version of the plan aims roughly three-quarters of its tax increases at businesses, either directly or through capital gains. And on the surface, soaking American business sounds to some like a good way for the government to fill its coffers. As the saying goes, the only fair tax is the one that someone else pays. However, if it's implemented, the proposed taxes are going to hit the pocketbooks of anyone with a 401k, anyone that works for a business in America, and anyone that buys U.S. products. In short, a tax on American business is a tax on all Americans. And businesses, especially large ones, make such nice scapegoats. However, we rely on them for almost all the goods and services that we enjoy. Most American households rely on businesses for one or two more paychecks. If the federal government destroys American businesses through punitive taxes, American consumers will be able to buy fewer goods and services, but also at higher prices. Recent estimates show that labor, not capital, bears most of the burden of corporate income taxes. Now, if an American company wants to invest in a new factory, the exodus of investors is going to make it difficult for that company to raise funds. Businesses will abandon otherwise attractive investment opportunities like new buildings, machinery, and equipment. Abandoned business investments will mean fewer jobs. American workers that would have been employed at a new factory may instead find themselves unemployed. At other businesses, workers are going to remain employed, but they're going to lose out on bonuses and pay raises. And with higher unemployment, American workers are going to have less leverage to negotiate with their employers. So to avoid what would become one of the least friendly business tax environments in the developing world, some businesses are going to choose to move or keep operations abroad rather than expand in the U.S. And it's difficult to estimate the exact scale of the job losses that this behemoth 2,465-page bill will cause. Few people have read the whole thing. Nobody fully understands it. I mean, what we know is in addition to new taxes, it also contains mandates on employers and added benefits for those not working. None of this is basically a recipe for growth. And who will be affected in the most by any government-induced job losses? If history is indication, Americans working in manufacturing, transportation, construction, oil and gas, and mining jobs stand to suffer the most. In the last three U.S. recessions, the unemployment rate of Americans in management and professional occupations increased by 3%. In the production, transportation, and material moving occupations, the unemployment rate jumped by about 7.5%, and in construction and extraction, it jumped by more than 9%. So if the U.S. economy sputters, blue-collar workers will suffer more than their fair share of job losses. Official government estimates show that taxes will go up not just on the very wealthy, but also on the middle and lower class Americans. Government estimates paint a deceptively rosy picture of the proposed tax impacts on lower-income Americans by ignoring indirect impacts and by confusing what is included in federal taxes and what is not. For example, nearly $100 billion of new increased federal taxes on tobacco and nicotine are left out of the published impacts in the federal tax provisions. And omissions like this skew the tax impacts numbers on lower-income Americans as tobacco taxes hit Americans in the bottom of the distribution especially hard. Compared to all other Americans, Americans in the bottom fifth currently spend about six times the larger share of their income on tobacco excise taxes than other Americans. Also contributing to confusion, official estimates classify new social welfare payments as federal tax payments, even payments going to Americans that pay no taxes. The House bill adds more than $600 billion of refundable tax credits. To most Americans, a refund means getting money back that they paid. To the IRS, refundable means it can send out checks to people that claim the credits, regardless of whether that individual paid a single penny in tax. The most detrimental part of the House bill, though, is not that it would be imposed harmful new taxes, is that those tax revenues would go towards a socialist wish list of programs that ingrain entitlements and threaten America's future prosperity. The U.S. has got a $28.4 trillion of debt as existing entitlement programs faced insolvency. Rather than shoring up the debt or making pro-growth reforms, the new spending would discourage work and foster a culture of dependency that robs people of purpose and dignity. So how will future generations deal with the debt we are laying at their feet if they're not raised in a culture that values hard work and entrepreneurship? The American people don't need more taxes and government programs. They need the federal government to get out of the way, quit spending their money, and stop trying to control every aspect of Americans' lives. It's Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up, and I hope you're listening. We'll be right back.
Cascade Radio Group has an immediate full-time opening for a news reporter to join our growing team at Heritage News Talk Station KGMI. We are seeking someone who is enthusiastic, dependable, and passionate about news. The ideal candidate has both journalism and broadcasting experience. Responsibilities include writing and recording news stories, conducting interviews, serving as producer for our afternoon news talk show, and maintaining station websites and social media. Email your resume to hr@cascaderadiogroup.com. Cascade Radio Group is an equal opportunity employer.
Hi, this is Jacob Marr with Marr's Heating. Are you looking for an HVAC system that will adapt to your home's needs? A variable speed heat pump from American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning does exactly that, giving you lower utility bills and maximum comfort. Plus, with rebates of up to $2,400, now is the time to invest in a heat pump from Marr's, your independent American Standard dealer. Find us online at marsheating.com. For out-of-this-world service, call Marr's.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning. If you've got questions for us, give us a call, 360-733-1200. Well, I saw an interesting thing this week talking about dropping F grades for kids that creates a new soft bigotry on low expectations. You know, groupthink is the enemy of rigor, and we define to be excellence has become captive to certain political agenda. Yet, in the name of eliminating systemic racism, Sunrise Park Middle School in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, near St. Paul, will no longer hand out F grades to the students who turn in the lowest quality work. The new grading system will no longer reflect student behavior and tardiness, or whether an assignment was completed on time. Grading, the school's website reads, perpetuates systemic racism. The revamp comes after the school completed a so-called equity audit, a tool increasingly used by school districts to assess gaps in district equity work, to take stock of school climate, review culturally relevant pedagogy, and evaluate achievement gaps and discipline disparities. Sounds benign enough, but equity audits align with the tenets of critical race theory, which holds that any disparities in student outcomes are a result of discrimination. These audits have come in conjunction with growth in chief diversity officers in K-12 schools, their diversity, equity, and inclusion brethren in higher education. Sunrise Park's middle school is not alone in abandoning its failing grades. The everyone gets a trophy approach to education is also found in high school math curriculum and phase out of college entrance exams, all in the name of equity. California State Board of Education recently approved the nation's first statewide ethics studies curriculum for K-12 students. The statewide framework recommends numerous times schools use a pathway of equitable math instruction, dismantling the racism in mathematics instruction. The Math Equity Toolkit explains that getting the right answer, teachers' control over the classroom, and students being required to show their work all are evidence of how math classrooms maintain white supremacy. As a result of the outcome of the settlement agreement, University of California System's Board of Regents is abandoning the SAT and the ACT tests. The lawsuit had claimed that tests were biased against minority and low-income students. Not to be outdone, Oregon lawmakers followed suit shortly thereafter, eliminating math and reading skills testing requirements for graduation. As with California, the new law is in service to more equitable graduation requirements. And grade inflation is a horrible corruption, Lowry says. In the case of eliminating Fs at Sunrise Park Middle School, the inflation does nothing to get struggling students. It simply masks areas where they may struggle academically, advancing them when they're unprepared for more rigorous work. And Florida abolished this practice, frequently referred to as social promotion, in the early 2000s to a great effect. Instead of promoting students to the fourth grade when they couldn't read proficiently, for example, Florida began requiring students to pass a third grade reading test before advancing to the fourth grade. In a study of Florida's retention policy, researchers Marcus Winters and J.P. Green found that students lacking in basic skills who are socially promoted appear to fall further behind over time, whereas retained students appear to be able to catch up on the skills that they're lacking. Indeed, in wake of Florida's end of social promotion, along with its robust embrace of school choice, black students' reading scores soared, increasing 25 percentage points on the National Assessment of Educational Progress. This was double the progress of black students nationally, whose reading scores improved 12 points during that time. Minority students in Florida began closing achievement gaps, tying or outscoring the statewide reading averages for all students in a number of states. And the end of social promotion in Florida played a role in these gains, but school choice was, and if not more likely, consequential in catalyzing improvements. The Sunshine State launched its tax credit scholarship program in 2001, now enrolls more than 100,000 participating students. These students, largely from lower-income families, are able to attend private school of choice that fits their learning needs. And also, Florida is also home to one of the seven innovative education savings account programs in the country, enabling families to use child share of public school funding to craft a completely customized education for their child. Florida's successful approach was the opposite of what woke districts in the White Bear Lake are pursuing. The Phelim Union New York School Board member I Enroll writes, equitable outcomes for everyone runs directly counter to the proper aim that each student achieves their full potential in life. Instead of lowering expectations of students through measures like eliminating F grades, states and local school districts should pursue policies that enable students to select their learning environments, meet their unique needs. For their part, districts should focus on helping students meet high academic expectations rather than sweeping problems under the rug. Keep all this in mind. You just got your ballots in the mail, and you're going to be voting for school board members. So look at where those school board candidates are and what they represent. Change topics here. Let's talk a little bit about the taxonomics of selling a home in retirement. You know, owning a house has traditionally been seen as part of the American dream. We love our homes for reasons like the backyard, the bonus room, basement, kitchens, location. Homes represent many of our aspirations and the location of many milestones and memories. It serves as the largest investment most Americans will ever make. Based on a national annual average, less than 6% of people over age 60 sell their homes. Retirees sell homes for a variety of reasons, of course. They want to downsize. They want to move closer to their family. They want to live in an income tax-friendly state or escape cold winter weather. Yet according to the Retirement Income Certified Professional Curriculum, the primary reason that retirees sell their homes is due to changing health conditions, which could create significant tax consequences. So let's take a look at selling homes this year in the best of times. You know, buying and selling homes is burdensome and emotionally charged. There are numerous expenses in a home sale, such as realtor fees, inspections, engineering reports, closing costs, etc. Adding to the burden for many is the reality that selling a home may create a tax on capital gain on the home's value. So late summer this year, home prices have experienced growth rates that have exceeded any past growth rate since 1976. The year-over-year percentage change from 20 to 21 has been about 20%. From a historical perspective, 1980 saw a 15% increase and 2009 saw a 12% decrease. Trends rotate, of course, and what goes up also does come down. So if you're thinking of selling your home now, more than ever, be sure to calculate the possible tax consequences. It's important to note the primary residence is given a special tax treatment, but this special treatment does not apply to a second home. The primary residence for IRS purposes is where you spend the majority of your time, and at the address used for tax returns, driver's licenses, and bills. So let's examine some of the tax issues of selling your home and discuss the factors that go into determining whether you're going to owe taxes when you sell. Well, how do you know I'm going to owe taxes? Well, first, the good news. The Taxpayer Relief Bill of 1997 added the personal residence capital gain exemption. The personal residence capital gain exemption provides married couples the ability to shelter up to $500,000 in tax-free gains, single up to $250,000 from the proceeds of sale of their home. Now, part of the Democratic tax bill may take that away, so be aware of that. That may not be around after 2021. But imagine Fred and Sally bought a home in California in 1980 for $150,000. Now they're entering retirement. They're selling their family home, relocating to Texas to be near their son and grandchildren. So they purchased the house in 1980 for $150,000. They sell it this year for $900,000. That's a $750,000 total gain. The exclusion amount, because they're married, at $500,000 means that they have $250,000 that's going to be taxed at 20%. Estimated long-term tax gains, they're going to owe about $50,000. So, next step, you have to find out if your house has a taxable gain. But now there's the bad news. There's additional considerations that have to be researched, which may impact whether your home sale will be taxable and or at what rate. If you have a second home, or recently married or remarried, you have to decide to retire outside the United States, you need to examine the rules closely. There are two categories that automatically disqualify the gain exclusion. One, if you receive the home through a tax-free exchange within the last 5 years, the tax exclusion is not going to be granted. And if you're subject to expatriate taxes in the case where you are no longer a resident of the United States. If you own two homes, spend time in both places, you're going to need to make sure to review whether you meet the three tests before you sell. These tests are ownership, use, and eligibility. So, passing the ownership test. One spouse needs to be a resident in the primary home for at least 24 months. It doesn't need to be consecutive, but out of the last 5 years. Two, both spouses must meet the use test. One spouse can satisfy that resident test. The use test requires both spouses use the home at least 24 months. The use test exceptions include being forced to move from your primary home due to physical or mental health reasons. The minimum time requirement then drops to 12 months if the home rather than 24 months. The key here is to move for documented health reasons, not well-being. And your eligibility requirements present a final test to ensure that you qualify for the exclusion. This is a look-back period. If married, both parents cannot use the gain exclusion in the last 2 years. So records are really important. Use and ownership start dates, evidence showing your principal residence, addresses, use, bills, tax returns, have two houses, the amount of time spent in each. Lastly, there is some allowance for partial exclusion under certain circumstances. A partial exclusion allows you to use a ratio in calculating possible taxes due on a home sale for location change due to employment, health, or unseen circumstances. But always seek the advice of a tax professional to make sure that you know the facts about your specific situation and the tax rules that may apply to you. This has been Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI this Sunday morning. Thanks for listening. Don't forget our live show Saturdays at 11. Got questions for us? Give us a call, 360-733-1200, and have a great week.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Kopenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guest on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Kopenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.